Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th Voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners. Welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Sandra Mead, your host, and I'm pleased to have Lou Karnas and Una Nalling joining me again in the studio today as co-hosts. And, of course, behind the board is our sound engineer and producer, Linda, who's struggling a little bit with allergies. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
We have a very interesting show lined up. Luke and Una are going to take the reins again, and we're going to talk about something that is an important subject for the trans community. It's a topic of interest to many people, even not in the trans community, and that's a topic of medical transition. That includes hormone surgery. There's a lot of thought that goes into making a decision to do that. There's a lot of curiosity around this. There's a lot of heavy emotions. It's not right for everybody. So we're going to explore that topic today, and I think you're going to find it to be very interesting. Here in the studio today, we have James, a transgender man who's just starting his transition, Amanda, a transgender woman who's been in transition for several years, and MJ, a transgender woman who has taken her transition fully through surgery. And then Una, of course, is going to finish up the show with the community calendar update. But first, Luke is going to give us a breakdown of some of the LGBT news this week.
In Arkansas, in reaction to the Arkansas law placing limits on local anti-discrimination ordinances, several cities are expanding their protections. The law prohibits local ordinances from prohibiting discrimination on a basis not recognized by the state. One Arkansas city is asking voters whether to defy the state, while others are expanding their own hiring policies to include sexual orientation and gender orientation. Arkansas is among 29 states that don't include sexual orientation in their anti-discrimination laws. And speaking of transfiring, the government has cleared an important hurdle in a discrimination lawsuit filed on behalf of a transgender employee who was fired by a Detroit area funeral home. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is suing for the rights of Amy Stevens, an embalmer and funeral director who was fired by the Harris Funeral Home after disclosing that she was transitioning from male to female and would dress as a woman. The funeral home says it has a legitimate interest in presenting a certain face to the public, but federal Judge Sean Cox says federal law doesn't specifically protect a transgender person, but he says there's binding legal precedent that protects people who are fired for failing to conform to a gender-biased basics expectation. And in celebrity news, last night on 2020, Bruce Jenner was interviewed by Diane Sawyer about the speculation around his gender identity. After months of remaining silent about his life-changing decision, the famed decathlete Bruce Jenner spoke publicly for the first time about transitioning from male to female in the interview. The announcement made him among the highest-profile people to publicly come out as transgender. He said, "For all intents and purposes, I am a woman." He said that he had been undergoing hormone therapy for a year and a half, but had not made up his mind about reassignment surgery, and for now, as far as pronouns go, to refer to him as the familiar masculine pronouns until he comes out later with a new name and as her. And more in celebrity news, Orange is the New Black actress Laverne Cox has landed a spot on People's Most Beautiful 2015 list. This comes as no surprise to many. When asked about the trans movement in 2015, Cox said, "We need more of what's happening in the media in terms of visibility to affect policies and how we treat transgender folks." Also, in men's health, a transgender man in Oregon has been making headlines for possibly becoming the first transgender man in history to be on the cover of Men's Health magazine. Aidan Dowling is becoming a more familiar name. The audience may recognize him from back in February when he recreated the nude Adam Levine photo in the UK Cosmo shoot. Maybe unknowingly to Dowling at the time, that will not be the last hunky photo of him out there for all of us to appreciate. About the Ultimate Guy contest, Dowling said, "For the transgender community, I think at least for a majority, my hope is that putting myself out there and entering the contest at all will give other trans people the courage to find their own voice and platform to express it." And there is also another transgender man in the Ultimate Guy contest who is also serving in the military. And in South Carolina, a transgender teen is named Chase Culpepper has won a settlement in which she was told to remove her makeup for her driver's license since her gender marker was listed as male. Now, since the settlement, the State Department of Motor Vehicles will handle how male and female applicants may dress for the identification photos. Culpepper stated, "My makeup and clothing reflect who I am. From day one, all I wanted was to get a driver's license that looks like me. Now I will be able to do that." And thanks to Culpepper and different settlements such as these, now so many more people will. And there's a Republican roundup, as if there were a rash of same-sex wedding invitations being issued to Republican presidential hopefuls. The question that was raised this week about who and who would not attend such an event. Responses range from Governor Rick Perry's probably to Jeb Bush and Senator Ted Cruz avoiding the question altogether. The most direct and surprising answers came from Ohio Governor John Kasich, who said that he would in the near future for a family friend, and Scott Walker, Governor of Wisconsin, who said that he would attend the reception but not the same-sex wedding, though Walker's son Alex was an official witness at his lesbian cousin's wedding. And in Alabama, an Alabama House committee voted Wednesday for a bill that would allow private adoption agencies to turn away same-sex couples on religious grounds. The bill says groups could not be forced to participate in adoptions and foster care placements that violate their religious beliefs. Supporters said it is needed to protect religiously affiliated adoption agencies, such as children's homes affiliated with the Baptist and Catholic churches. And that is the news.
Hello, this is Una Nowling for Trans Talk on the 10th Voice. Surgery is a very contentious issue within the transgender community, chiefly because it is critical to many of us to begin to align our body gender with our mental gender. Today we have three guests from the transgender community for whom the subject of surgery has many different meanings. Each of our guests, like each transgender person, has their own journey of gender transition, which only they may walk. And so this program is sort of a snapshot of three lives, even though their stories are somewhat common to many of us. My first guest here is MJ, also known as Marsha, who is a transgender woman who has gone through social, legal, and physical gender transition. Thank you very much for joining us, Marsha.
Good afternoon.
Now, Marsha, you have undergone a full gender transition, as I said. Can you tell me a little bit about your life and your gender identity before you began transition? That is, how long have you known that you were transgender?
Well, I knew as a young child, like many of us in the community do know, and I struggled my entire life, and I'm a little older than most, and I'm in my 60s, and it just wasn't something that was discussed, or there really wasn't the information available. As I got older and became more exposed to the information, I realized that I was trans, I was a woman, and something that I've really known my entire life, but I was able to format it in such a way as I could deal with it. And I've known since I was a very young child.
And how long has it been since you made the decision to begin transition?
I started my transition in late 2012.
So you have been at it for approximately 3 years?
Roughly.
I know from personal experience how difficult it is to suppress one's gender identity for so long and what a tremendous leap of faith it can be to finally transition. Was there a precipitating event or something that changed in your life that made you decide that finally now the time had come?
I wouldn't say there was a specific time in my life that I realized the transition was necessary. It was an evolution. And at the time that I did start the transition, I had reached the end of my career. Things that I was using to mask and hide behind in the shell that I used to protect myself was flaking off. And in 2012, I realized that my career was winding down, my children were grown, and it was necessary for me to continue my life. I needed to transition fully.
Now, you have undergone gender confirmation surgery, and since that is the focus of our program, I want to ask, for you personally, what did gender confirmation surgery mean to you?
For me, it meant that I was complete, that I was on the outside what I was, have always been mentally, and I was reached the point that the confidence has increased for me, my ability to deal with day-to-day situations, with my life, my friends, my family, and my work. I am much more confident and much more comfortable in myself, I guess.
When you made your decision to undergo surgery, did you receive support for your decision from your family and friends, both inside and outside of the transgender community?
From family, no. From friends, yes. I have a very strong group of friends in the community that have been extremely supportive of me.
Now, many who have undergone surgery say that while the surgery is somewhat daunting and somewhat, you know, it is a major trial to undergo. They say that it's the healing process afterwards that's actually more difficult. Could you talk a little bit about that in general?
For me, the healing process wasn't that difficult. I spent quite a bit of time getting myself physically ready to undergo such an invasive procedure. And so my recovery was not difficult after, say, the first 64 hours. And after I got beyond the initial surgical period, I really did not have a lot of issues with recovery.
Now, you were fortunate in that you had some friends to help you out, including a good friend who helped you out in the immediate recovery process, Suzanne, correct?
Yes.
Now that your surgery is done and the healing process is mostly complete, how has it actually changed your life? Did it become as different as you thought it would be?
It really hasn't dramatically changed my life. My life changed dramatically when I decided to transition in 2012, entered into the transition process. The surgery was more of a confirmation and a confidence builder for me. It really hasn't changed my life in totality, but it has made me a much more confident, and I think a person who is a much friendlier, much more easygoing person because of my ability to complete my journey.
Now, you were a very athletic person. You're a long-distance biker, and you engaged in other athletics. Did surgery change the way that you work out, or did the surgery take a toll on you physically?
I haven't been able to spend much time on a bicycle because of the surgical. I'm hoping that will change by summer as I continue to heal. And I have lost a lot of strength and some endurance, not a lot, but I have lost strength. And I am still very active. I was back in the gym after about 6-7 weeks post-surgery.
Has having the surgery made it easier to be in a woman's space in the gym?
Dramatically different. I don't feel like I'm hiding or have any reason not to be there. Now I'm very comfortable in those situations. I'm just a woman.
Thank you very much, Marcia. We need to take a brief break for a station announcement, and then we'll be right back.
Support for KKFI provided by All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut, providing a weekly forum every Sunday at 10 a.m. This Sunday's forum features Dr. Stanley Edlovich, UMKC Professor of Epidemiology in Psychiatry, whose work has established links between negative thought patterns and clinical symptoms of acute suicide risk. More information available at allsoulskc.org.
This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Mexico's top court equalizes Sinaloa marriages. U.S. Republican presidential wannabes run rings around religious freedom. And Matt Shepard's friend remembers the guy she knew in a new documentary. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
This Way Out airs 2 p.m. Saturdays, right after the 10th Voice.
Well, Marsha, this is Luke here. I wanted to make a statement about how quickly you got back into the gym, six to 7 weeks. When I had top surgery, the chest reconstruction surgery, we were advised not to go to the gym for about 6 to 8 months, and sometimes people even wait up to, well, not that dramatically, but not to, you know, affect scarring or anything. Some people even wait up until a year, so I just wanted to say you are a trooper for going back that quickly and so dedicated.
Yes, I also wanted to emphasize that gender confirmation surgery is absolutely not mandated to go to the gyms and the locker rooms, but for some in the transgender community, they nonetheless feel some pressure, and so I was trying to be sensitive to that sense of, awkwardness potentially. One thing I wanted to ask you is that there is sometimes sort of a social hierarchy within the transgender community whereby those who have undergone surgery are at the top of the social strata, so to speak. Do you have any sense of that change after your surgery?
In a word, no. I don't feel any different or my relationship with my friends post or pre-surgery, I feel is no different. I don't feel any different in the community. I don't feel special. I don't feel entitled. I feel I'm just the same person I was before. I still love and respect my friends no matter where they're at in their journey.
Has your family treated you differently after your surgery?
Again, no, I don't feel they've treated me any differently. They weren't supportive of me having surgery, and I understood that going in. There is a degree of acceptance with some of my children, not all, but I don't feel it's any different post-surgery.
For the first 16 years or so of the post-Christine Jorgensen era in America, gender confirmation surgery was nearly impossible to acquire, which led to transgender persons having to travel outside of the U.S. to Morocco, Mexico, or still further places to have their surgery. If you had been legally prevented from having surgery, Marsha, would you have done the same?
Yes, I would have.
What if, for some reason, it had been impossible for you to have surgery for your confirmation? What if, medically speaking, you had been kept from having it? Would that have changed who you are as a person, or would it be causing you some anguish?
Of course it would have caused me anguish, because I would have felt that I was not able to complete my journey. I had transitioned, and for me, the actual legal transition and moving and living as my true self was the true transition that made my life, the continuation of my life possible. Surgery was just added, and I would have been able to deal with it. It would have been very depressing not to be able to complete my journey.
Thank you very much, Marsha, for sharing your story with us. We're now going to move on to James and to hear a bit of his story.
Hi, James. Thank you so much for being on the radio with us today.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So first, I just want to have, our audience get a better idea of who you are as a person. If you just want to tell us about yourself a little bit and kind of how you got into the journey of knowing about transitioning being possible.
Transitioning, I just kind of, whenever I came to college here at UMKC, I was kind of exposed to a lot more than I was in St. Joe. I came out as a lesbian when I was 17 in St. Joe, and beyond the G, B, and L of the LGBT community. It really, there was no transgendered information in St. Joe. And so whenever I moved to Kansas City, that's when I kind of learned about it. I identified as genderqueer and then moving on to realizing that I'm really just a dude.
And about how long ago was that?
It's about 2.5 years ago. I was 23. So. Mm-hmm.
And so you've been living as James since then?
Yeah. Socially, definitely 2.5 years. Professionally, maybe closer to 2.
Okay. And I know a lot of people will be interested in knowing because you are, you know, how they say pre-everything. That means, you know, some people that decided to go on hormone replacement therapy or have any surgeries, that would be pre-op, pre-all, all of those. So what, can you give us a little bit of insight about why, you know, let's just start with testosterone, why you haven't started that yet?
I really wanted to be in a healthy place physically before I started testosterone. I'm a bigger guy. I had lab work done, and it wasn't great. And so I just wanted to take the time for myself to get healthy, to have my labs come back great, so that whenever I started testosterone, there wouldn't be any kind of complications with that.
Exactly, exactly. And what have you been doing to get healthy and to get those lab that lab work coming back looking shining for you?
A lot of time at the gym.
Oh, yeah.
I belong to a great gym, city gym, KC and Waldo. Just work out pretty much I lift 6 days a week, spin class 3 times a week. I've tried to do clean eating. They really wanted me to do paleo, but that's just really hard. And so.
And I want everyone to know that James is trying to get me to start spin classes, which are really scary. We went 10 minutes the last week, I think, and I haven't been to the gym since. I've also never sweat so much in 10 minutes, so I just want to put that out there.
He bought bike shorts, so he's on the right path.
I'm on the path. It costs money, so it has to be real now, I guess. about what time, because I know we've talked about this personally, but around what time are you hoping to start on the hormones?
June or July. I'm getting ready to start a big program at the gym, and they say that results can vary so much to where it can have a huge effect on your health. And so the goal was July, but after making the promise to myself that I would start this program, it might be June.
Okay, awesome. And then what... in terms of surgeries, you know, for those who don't know, with trans men, I mentioned earlier, top surgery, which is chest reconstruction surgery, and then there's also lower surgery, which is kind of what we're talking about as well. So what kind of timeline do you see yourself with that, with top surgery specifically?
Top surgery will probably be about 1.5 years. I haven't begun any kind of fundraising or budgeting for that, and so that is just to come. The goal is 1.5 years. Realistically, it'll probably be 2, but...
I wonder how you feel about... There are a lot of different insurance companies that are starting to cover different kinds of surgeries, you know, more recently as those are getting passed. In a timeline in 1.5 years, how do you feel? Do you think, you know, insurance, you try to go that route to try to get that covered, or how do you feel about that? Because it, personally, you know, out of pocket, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
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 Thousands of dollars.
Of course.
Yeah. So would you wait, you know, for insurance, or is it something that's you just want to go out of pocket if you have to?
I mean, if in 2 years, let's say that they do cover it, I wouldn't be opposed to waiting like the 6 more months to get that covered. If I did have enough fundraising, then it wouldn't matter to me that much. Hoping with all the weight loss that my chest will go down a bit as well.
Do you think that after you have surgery that it will change your life significantly or possibly even change relationships with those you may love?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that surgery would change just kind of my life and the relationship I have with other people. I wouldn't have to wear like 5 things underneath the shirt that I'm currently wearing. That's for sure. But, I mean, it would be great to look down and be like, oh, that's flat, and I don't have a shirt on. What?
So you were talking before here with me personally about different locations, and I know Una had mentioned that before about lower surgery with trans women. There are some different surgeons in the United States. So how would you feel about traveling, not traveling so far? I know some people, there's a surgeon in Texas, there's surgeons in Florida, Ohio, Nebraska. Have you looked into that and done any research?
For lower surgery, no. It's not something that I personally feel like I have to have right now. Being 25, I'm probably definitely not in a financial state to have that right now. So, I mean,
if you are, then I'm jealous.
Yeah. A lot of people would be jealous. So, I mean, if that's something that needs to wait 10 to 15 years, that's totally fine. To me, my lower surgery would only really affect me and my partner, if, you know, if I have a partner. And so, I mean, as of right now, that's not something that I necessarily need to have.
So if you found a partner who just told you, James, I really don't care about, you know, what's in your trousers, so to speak, you would be perfectly fine not having lower surgery?
I mean, not perfectly fine. I mean, a part of me would still want that. There are, you know, the benefits of having that lower surgery. But it's just definitely not something that I would want to rush into.
And then I just want to go back and just ask you what it's been like, because I can't imagine, you know, with my own process, I started testosterone pretty quickly after I went to therapy and then, you know, had my top surgery within 9 months of starting testosterone. What has it been like with people respecting you, with respecting your name and pronouns and work? Because I understand you go by, you've been going by James, you know, socially everywhere. What has that been like for you to have to deal with? Do people question it because you haven't started testosterone yet? Or how do you handle that in all-encompassing?
I'm pretty fortunate. I look fairly masculine already, thanks for my mom and dad's genes. I also actually suffer from polycystic ovarian syndrome, and that increases your level of testosterone. So I stopped shaving probably here in the next couple months, and I have a pretty good mustache that some of my guy friends are jealous of.
That's me. You're talking about me because it's it's fuller than mine, and I've been on testosterone for almost 3 years. So just putting that out there.
But other than that, I mean, not really. My work has been really great. Working in the restaurant industry, I feel like it is a little bit easier in the trans or LGBT community in general. They're just like a lot more accepting. It's not something that's really cared about. And so that's been great. But no, I mean, no one's ever said I'm like less of a trans man because I'm not on T yet.
And do you feel that way in the community, the trans men community specifically? Do you feel like people judge you differently or treat you differently at all for being, you know, as we're saying, at the beginning of your journey?
Like I said, again, not really. A lot of people are really shocked to find out I'm not on testosterone. And so that's a plus, I guess.
And he also gets really wicked haircuts, too. It makes him look really awesome that I'm about to get as well. Because, you know, with appearances like that, that changes a lot of how people look at you with what your haircut looks like and everything.
Yes, I just want to comment for our listeners out there that James truly does look like one of the manliest men that ever manned.
Yeah.
After me, of course.
Oh, of
yes,
course.
Absolutely after you.
Okay, James. Una, do you have any other questions?
I think at this point we're getting ready to have a brief sound break, and I believe that we have Oh Yeah by the Clicks queued up and ready to go, and we'll be joining you directly afterwards.
That was a very good tune, Linda, by the Clicks, a trans band.
That's right.
I really enjoyed that. Hey, this is Sandra. I've got a quick question for you guys. I've been listening to this very interesting conversation. It seems, you know, we're making a lot of matter-of-fact question and answer here about surgery, but I'm kind of curious about the emotion, the impact of something called body dysmorphia, because I'm not too sure that everybody understands the difference between gender dysphoria and body dysmorphia. Body dysmorphia is really critical and can be a debilitating thing for the trans community. Lots of people have body dysmorphia. You can have body dysmorphia if you're extremely overweight, things like that. But body dysmorphia, dissatisfaction with different elements of your body, can be extremely debilitating for the trans community, and that leads to many of the decisions for the surgery that we have here. And, you know, I'm just kind of curious what Luke and Una, you know, your comments, what you think about the impact of body dysmorphia in our community, and, you know, how that drives the imperative decision for many people that they must have surgery.
And I think this is something that affects people who are not trans as well, having that dissatisfaction with your body. There's so much in society that tells us, you know, we're supposed to look a certain way, and that can be even more impactful. So for some people who are, you know, in the gender binary transition, strictly from, you know, female to male or male to female. I still have body dysmorphia about myself, about being overweight and not looking like the kind of man that I want to look like. And I think there's a lot of peace that everybody has to come to at some point, hopefully. And sometimes that's not easy to achieve. And so that's where we get to these decisions that, you know, trans people, if they want to have different surgeries to affirm their identity and how they see themselves and, you know, create more satisfaction with their bodies, I think that's where that comes into. But it definitely creates that anxiety and depression and a lot of other, you know, mental health issues that, you know, pile on to everything that we're already feeling about, you know, ourselves and in society.
Body dysmorphia greatly impacted me before I began transition. I hated to catch my reflection in the mirror, actually, and I only would look in a mirror when I absolutely had to, such as, well, driving, for instance, where it's kind of foolish not to look in the mirror. When I lived alone for 2 years, I actually hung bed sheets over the large mirrors in the bathrooms and took down the other mirrors and essentially eliminated anything that would show me a reflection of this body that I clearly felt did not belong to me. And, you know, it is one of the reasons why so many in our community, if they are not able to or not allowed to transition for whatever reason, can resort to self-mutilation and even suicide as a result. Because waking up with this body that does not match your gender identity is almost like being trapped in a prison every single moment of your life. We want to go on now to our final guest on the show today, who is Amanda. Amanda is a transgender woman who has undergone social, legal, and, as they say, chemical transition, but she has not yet undergone gender confirmation surgery. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Hi, Una.
Can you tell me a little bit about your life and when you first realized your gender identity was female?
Wow. It's kind of different for me. I grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin, and I had no clue that there was anything, such a thing as transgender. And so... there were signs all the way through my early adulthood that existed. I just knew that something wasn't right, but I didn't know what to call it. It was years later when I finally, through research on the internet, figured out who I was and what to do about it.
Now, you have transitioned socially and legally and, like I said, chemically as well. And you've been in transition for, I think, 6 years. Is that correct?
I think it's more like four, yeah.
4 years? I'm sorry. Can you tell us why your journey has been longer than, say, Marcia's, for instance? Is there a particular reason?
I guess it would probably have to do with fear, and it was a fear of losing a marriage, It was a fear of losing a of losing my job and my career and that made me progress more slowly than some others do. You know, the path, I think, is really unique to the individual and their circumstances. So mine's just, you know, the way it is.
How have you been able to deal with your body dysmorphia in lieu of undergoing surgery? How strongly has it affected you, or how strongly does it impact you today?
For me, personally, it's very strong. Surgery is on my horizon, and it would already be done if I could afford it, but I can't afford it at this point. I'm hopeful, as was discussed earlier, that some of the health insurance laws will change, and so that will help, but it's on my horizon. It's very, very painful for a lot of people to have to go through and wake up every morning and see that in the mirror. So for me, it's significant, but I don't speak for everyone.
Can you imagine your life after surgery and how you feel that it would change you, the way that you examine and look at yourself, and how it would change the way that you feel?
You know, there would be a sense of completeness, which is very important to me. I don't want to predispose that this is a necessary step for everyone, but for me, yes, I would feel like I've completed the process. Did I answer the question?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Many of your friends and my friends as well have gone ahead and undergone gender confirmation surgery. Now, this is a very personal question I'm springing on you here, but do you feel a little envious of them, or a little jealous even?
Oh, sure. personally, yeah, for me, of course. Yeah, because it's something that I'm aspiring to go and get for myself. And so, you know, that's just human nature, I think. Mm-hmm. But yes, do I think they're any better because they've gotten the surgery? No, I don't. I, you know, a person is a person. They're either a good person or a bad person. So, that doesn't change with surgery.
That is very true. I'm glad that you brought that point up. In terms of interpersonal relations, that is, finding a partner to love, is surgery important in that circumstance? If you found a partner who said, Amanda, you're a great babe, and you do look wonderful, by the way, and I don't really care what's under your skirt and so forth, would you still have just as much drive to undergo gender confirmation surgery?
Really, Una? You're going to do this to me? okay. Again, I think that the answer to that question is very unique to the individual. Personally, I have a lot of trouble with it. I don't feel...
I understand.
I don't understand. I sometimes don't understand people's motivations, right? Because my parts don't exactly match right now. Mm-hmm. So I would be ever so much more comfortable in that situation if everything was correct. So in that case, it's just another reason for me why surgery is important. But I don't speak again for everyone in it. And there's a lot of different answers out there.
Sure.
Definitely, and I know we consider in a lot of the transition process that people decide to go on with, you know, hormones and having surgeries, that there are these different milestones. And I understand you are on estrogen.
I am, okay. Yes.
Does that help ease any of your feelings about wanting to get surgery and not being able to, until, you know, financially until you can, knowing that you have at least started something to affirm?
If I understand it. Understand you correctly. For me, I don't think it plays a role in that. Estrogen really was, for me, it was more for my mind, I guess. And then, of course, some of the things that it does to your body, which are wonderful.
exactly.
But no, estrogen or not, I would still kind of feel the same way.
Okay. I know with some trans men, starting testosterone is like a really epic milestone and helps ease the, you know, in the sense of the transition timeline going into surgeries.
Okay. Well, that's valid, right? So when I first started taking estrogen, right, it was absolutely a huge moment in my life.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of guys will be, you know, I've been 1 month on testosterone. I eat all the time, you know, just so excited about getting started on something.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to take a brief break here for station identification, and then we will be back with our guests.
Then goes the gun and everyone.
Inc's Middle of the Map Fest, supporting 90.1 FM KKFI, presents the Wednesday Midday Medley 90.1 FM Day Party, Saturday, April 25th, 2 o'clock to 5:30 at the Westport Saloon, 4112 Pennsylvania Avenue, with The Lucky, The Project H, She's a Keeper, The Big Iron, and Not a Planet. More info at middleofthemapfest.com.
Welcome back to Trans Talk. Luke Harness and myself are here in the studio with Marcia, James, and Amanda discussing the topic of surgery in the transgender community and in our transgender lives. Now, Amanda, the subject was raised before our break about whether or not estrogen or the act of going on estrogen had changed your need for surgery. My experience was when I went on estrogen, it greatly improved my quality of life and removed much of my self-negativity, so to speak. But then it sort of came back that I'm not done yet with my transition. And then next came the social and the legal transition. And again, each one gives you a boost, but you still see that there is a road ahead that remains unwalked. Is that sort of a good description of the process you've gone through?
Yes and no, I guess. I think that I have to say for me, I've always been clear on what the end goal is for my path. But I'm like so very cognizant of the fact that everyone's path is different. And I just, you know, I know a lot of people in the community who have chosen not to have surgery, to be non-op or for whatever reason they can't have surgery. There's no real hierarchy. So, I mean, really, I don't think you can judge people that way. For me, estrogen was a means down the path, and surgery for me is a means down the path. If I was told tomorrow that I couldn't have surgery, I don't think that would make me any less of a woman. So
that is a wonderful point, Amanda. Mm. And it seems to me that as the barriers to changing gender markers on legal documentation and at workplaces, at educational institutions, and so forth are being broken down, that we are seeing more people choosing to be non-op. And I guess a general question for anyone here who would like to answer it, can you envision it in the future whether or not being non-op would be much more common than it is today? Or do you think most of us will always have that drive to be 100% gender binary complete, so to speak, with our bodies?
Yeah, that's kind of a really open question, right? You're asking me to speak for like our entire community, And I personally think, and I don't have any statistics to back it up, but I personally think there's far more non-op people out there right now than there are surgically, than people who have gone through their surgery. That may change in coming years with the availability of healthcare and that. But I don't know. For me, again, it's a very, very personal, individual choice as to how you want to proceed down your journey.
I think this is Sandra. I think Amanda, you've made some really good points. I just want to reiterate your whole comment about everybody has their own path. This is really a roadmap for everybody. Some people take the Autobahn to get there, and some people take the windy road through the hills, right? And not everybody's destination is the same. So, very good. I think we're witnessing, to be honest with you, Una, that's a really good question, but there is a very small percentage of people who are gender variant who do have gender confirmation surgery, and not all people who identify as transsexual on the gender binary currently have surgery for various reasons. But to be honest, I think it's a different question we need to be asking, is how much longer is a gender binary going to be valid? I think with today's youth, we're seeing the ultimate demise of the gender binary in the first place, because it's a gender spectrum, and there's so many people out there now that are going to feel comfortable expressing themselves in whatever gender fashion they want. Has absolutely nothing to do with their genitalia, and I think we can't get there fast enough.
That is exactly the point that I was leading to, Sandra. Thank you very much. Based on the recent experiences that I've had talking with and working with non-gender binary transgender persons, those are folks for whom they do not suffer from the level of body dysmorphia that gender binary transgender persons do. So they have less drive to undergo surgery. Yeah.
Well, then I want to drop another big question here. One of you, James, Marsha, or Amanda, can answer, if you had to explain to someone who was not transgender, so a cisgender person, how you know what your gender is, how would you explain that? And how would you explain that feeling? Go, James, go.
Yeah, everyone's pointing to me. I mean, you just know, and to try to explain that to a cisgendered person is hard, but I mean, we've all had to explain that to cisgendered people. We've all come out, whether family, friends, social, work. I'm personally very blessed to be able to have the family and friends that I do, but I've, at the end of the day, I just go, I've always been super masculine or butch or, whatever word you want to call it. And so this is just who I am.
I might turn that around and I might ask the person that's asking me that question, how did you know that you were male or female as a young person? We know as young people that we're in the wrong body, that our body does not match our mind, and we just know. And it's very similar to how a cis person would know that they were, in fact, boy or girl.
And I would counter that with saying, in my personal experience, I wouldn't call it that I'm in the wrong body, but that my body developed in a way that I didn't identify with. As a kid, I identified with the boys and not with the girls, and I didn't know what that meant. As we all had said before, we couldn't put words to it. So that's how I would, I think Sandra has a really good example that she does with how do you know you're left-handed or right-handed? You just know. It's just natural. I know that I'm a man, and I've always known it's just natural.
I think that's a wonderful point to end on here, Luke. I'd like to thank our guests, Amanda, Marsha, and James, for being in the studio with us today. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Now I'm going to go in and read the Kansas City Community Calendar. There are, as usual, several events at the Like Me Lighthouse this coming month. Today at 7 p.m., there will be a Steve Grand listening party featuring a celebration of his music and some free giveaways of CDs and posters. On Wednesday coming up, April 29th, at from 4 to 8 p.m., there will be a social awareness art project titled Contracting an Issue, featuring spoken word documentary performances about HIV/AIDS and their impact upon our global community. And on May 5th, there will be Tuesday Movie Night at the Lighthouse featuring La Caja Fall, the movie which inspired the remake with Nathan Lane and Robin Williams under the title The Birdcage. Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City. Today at 8 p.m. and tomorrow at 4 p.m., the Kansas City Women's Chorus will be performing We Sing Her Song at the Rose Theater at 9301 State Line Road, Kansas City. In their traditional charity drag queen style, a benefit bingo will be hosted at Hamburger Mary's to benefit the Justice Project of Kansas City this Thursday. That's at Hamburger Mary's at 3700 Broadway, Kansas City, Missouri, next to the Uptown Theater, and that runs from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. On Tuesday, May 5th, the UMKC Trans Plus Allies group will meet at the UMKC Student Union in room 302 from 6 to 8 p.m. This meeting will feature Michael Henderson from Counseling, Consulting, and Meditation, who will come to speak to the trans community about mental health. The UMKC Trans Plus Allies meetings are an excellent way to interface with the transgender students at UMKC and to better understand their issues and concerns. And as an adjunct professor at the university, I would like to urge all of my fellow faculty members at UMKC to try attending a session or two. The Kansas City SOFA group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons will meet on the first and third Wednesday of this month, May 6th and May 20th at 6:30 at the Leawood Pioneer Library Study Room, number 115, 4700 Town Center Drive, Leawood. And finally, the Kansas City PFLAG chapter for parents, families, friends, and allies of transgender people will meet on the second Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village and the fourth Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. That's the community calendar for the upcoming month. And to all my transgender sisters and brothers out there, be exceedingly good to yourselves.
Very interesting show.
And Ook.
Luna and Ook, short for
Luna and Luke. That's pretty good. And I haven't even had a drink yet. And maybe I need one. Very interesting show talking about medical transition. You know, that's in many cases that's a goal of people. In many cases, it's an unachievable goal, and it can be a very heart-wrenching subject. Just the decision to transition takes a lot of guts. I think many of us had countless nights where we cried ourselves to sleep just coming to the decision that we were going to transition, knowing what we faced ahead of us. And so it was a very interesting show you guys had, so thank you. Luke, you and I had the opportunity to participate in a KCUR interview this week. I wasn't expecting them to scoop the story that I was my pending departure from Trans Talk, but that kind of happened on that show. So so just, you know, I do want to say that I've made the decision for some time now. I've been kind of planning on moving on. I've been associated with Trans Talk for about 3 years now, and I think it's just been wonderful. And bringing on Una and Luke, I think, was a big part of my plan to eventually free myself up to take on some other things. And so June is going to be my last show here on Trans Talk, and I'm really excited about what the future brings on Trans Talk with Una and Luke, because they're so articulate and great. So just to throw that out there for the listeners to be aware of. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, James, MJ, and Amanda. I'd also like to thank my co-hosts, Luke Harness and Una Nowling, for doing such a great job with these interviews, as well as our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. You can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the 10th voice at gmail.com. Next up, you can stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. You're currently listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial.
Talking about discriminating against a person, we're talking about someone who's saying, I just don't want to participate as a vendor for a specific event that violates the tenets of my faith.
If you want to marry another woman, you can do that and have a contract. The thing is the religious connotation of marriage, I still want to preserve that.
How can you say you're an American citizen and not have the same rights? You pay the same taxes.
I just wish we never had to make this film. It's important to me as his friend that people get to know him as someone other than just a victim.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Mexico's top